Welcome to Legally Uncensored. I'm your host, Demetria Graves, a licensed family law attorney in California. On this show, we dive into the hard-hitting topics of family law, and I aim to be as uncensored as possible. We provide valuable insights to help you navigate the complexities of love and sometimes even war. Whether you're divorced, going through a divorce, single, married, or a serial dater, just here to be educated and sometimes entertained, we got you. This season, we are digging deeper into the shadows, shedding light on narcissism, traumas, and the darker sides of divorce and relationships. But fear not, we're also celebrating the triumphs of the underdog. It's time to expose the truth, explore the gritty details, and uncover the wins amidst the chaos. In today's episode, we will explore the impact of divorce on children's educational journeys and delve into effective strategies for teachers and parents to support these young learners. Lori Beth is a dedicated educator with 19 years of experience in the Los Angeles Unified School District, teaching kindergarten through sixth grade. Lori Beth holds a master's in education and is a national board certified teacher specializing in early childhood education with a passion for fostering young minds. Please join me in welcoming Lori Beth, a dedicated teacher who has made a significant impact on the lives of countless students. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Hi, happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. You and I have talked about this, and I think this is a very, very interesting topic about what children experience as they go through divorce and have to navigate their own emotions and deal with being in different homes, and the list continues. So explain to us a little bit what you do, if you want to share where you're currently working and all that good stuff.
Okay, so hi everyone. My name is Lori Beth Mao. Currently, I'm a sixth grade teacher at Robert Hill Lane Elementary. It's part of Los Angeles Unified School District in Monterey Park. And the topic of divorce comes up every single year. So I want to set up what happens in my classroom. Every single day, we start the day with community circle. And this is where we make these promises to listen, to protect, to keep safe one another, and that we're here for one another. And that's how we build trust and community. And so every year, family, the topic of family comes up. And with family, whether it's in kindergarten or whether it's in sixth grade, there's always students who come from divorced homes. Now, Demetria, you made me do my research, and I was like, how many kids have I really taught, and how many have been either going through divorce with their parents or have been part of divorced homes? And over 18 years, I've had 58 students, and they're all so different, right? Every situation is different, yet every situation also has a lot of similarities. A lot of what I learn from my students happens in, you know, I do early parent conferences in September, which is usually unheard of. We usually do it during the first reporting period, but I want to meet all the families right off the bat. It happens during community circle that I learn about families. And then a lot through like email and communication through our app we use, which is called Class Dojo. And so that's where I get a lot of insight of what's going on with the kids.
So what are some of the initial signs that you see? So if another teacher is listening to this, what do you typically see? Is a change in behavior? Is a change in performance? Is there a combination of both? What do you typically see?
So once I find out, it's kind of like a red flag, right? Like, okay, I need to make sure that we're spending extra time, love and care with this child to make sure that they're feeling good at school. But oftentimes, kids tend to express that they're mad. You know, in kindergarten, they're mad, they're angry. In second grade, they feel a lot of mistrust. Betrayal. That's what, from my last sixth grade class, they felt betrayed that their father had left, even though the parents said, no, this was, we agreed upon this. So there's feelings of betrayal, of shame. There's a lot of shame of like, my mom and my dad are fighting and they don't like one another and I'm a part of them. And there's a lot of sadness, right? Just an overall feeling of sadness of things like Mother's Day and Father's Day. And we just had culmination and their worries of where are they going? Are you going to have them sit next to each other? What's going to happen during parent conferences? Do you have to meet with them separately? Even though they're young, they take a lot upon themselves. And so, yes, they do act out in class, right? Because sometimes kids don't know how to process these feelings. And divorce is trauma. And so they could act out. They could build a wall. They don't want to talk to anybody about it. They don't want to communicate. They don't want to. We have counselors at our schools, and we have to get permission from the parents if they feel like their child would like to speak to a counselor, but sometimes they don't want to. Sometimes it's indifference. A lot of times in the upper grades, it's, I don't care anyways. So you kind of get that attitude. And all of that absolutely impacts academics.
Do you bring in the parents at any point to say, hey, this is going on, and create a strategy to navigate the school year? And my bonus question is, what do you do when one parent is committed to their kid's success, but one parent is just trying to win in court? So they're not really focused on how their child is navigating the process.
Like I mentioned before, every situation is different, right? So we've got the amicable divorce where they're like, we're on Team Jennifer. We're all here for her. Even though we're separate, we're going to work with her. And those, of course, tend to be more supportive. But most oftentimes, it's the parents who are not working together. And so coming up with a plan, I mean, I did the math. Out of all the 58 cases, I've only had 3 students who stayed with their dads. And of those 3 students, they were all male, and it was dad and grandma, and there wasn't another relationship. All the rest, all the other 55, they all stayed with mom. And so from my experience, I'm mostly working with moms on academics, on behavior. Sometimes dad might be involved, but most of the time they're not. I mean, just from my data, there's this dynamic that impacts academics, which is mom is the one in charge of the school week. So Monday through Thursday, I'm with mom. She tends to be the disciplinarian. She makes me go to bed. And then you've got fun dad on the weekend. And so fun dad, we go to Knott's Berry Farm. We get to go see movies. We stay up late. So then on Monday, the kids are exhausted. Mom's upset because kid hasn't slept. Kid's upset because why is mom always mad at dad? I love fun dad. And then many times dad is not taking responsibility. I spend time with my kid, and now you just listen to your mom. So we get a lot of that, which, because there's a disconnect with the parents, you know, the kids are confused, you know, depending on the age, they're confused. With my upper graders, they tend to want to manipulate the situation.
Right. Yeah, I tell clients that all the time. Like, kids are very, very smart, and they will start playing parents against each other. But what do you do as a teacher? Like, what is the plan when you see the parents aren't on the same page, but this kid is drowning and nobody is really paying attention to the impact on their education, which is extremely important?
So my biggest advice to other educators and to parents is you have to build relationships. Because once the parents see that I'm on your side, I'm here for your child, and once they both see how dedicated I am, they're all on board. I've never had one scenario where it's like, this lady's crazy. Get her away from me. Never. It's more like, okay, she really wants to help him out. She really is there for her. So what do we need to do? So what I would recommend is you need to build relationships early on throughout the school year. Let them know that you're available, like I'm here to support you. But the main focus is on the student and not what's happening at home.
Do you give them more time for their work? How do you manage like the behavioral changes and the changes in their work? What happened?
Again, building relationships. Once I have that relationship with the kid, once we understand what's going on, it happens actually a lot in community circle. So in community circle, it's literally my community every morning, my class, we get into a circle and we check in with one another. What happens at the home comes up in circle. And so maybe for the day, it's like, okay, 1 means I'm having a terrible morning. 5 means this was the best morning of my life. And it's when those kids who are choosing the 1s and 2s from within our circle, we know, okay, we need a checkup on him or her. What do we need to do? And I think once you just start to care, once they know that you're an adult and you have friends that are concerned about you, behaviors change. No kid wakes up and says, I'm going to be a jerk today to everybody. Nobody does that. They all want to feel accepted. They all want to feel loved. They all want to feel seen. And many times in the divorce, they feel unwanted, unseen, ashamed that, like, this is another thing. I'm sorry, I'm going all over the place,
That's but okay.
They feel responsible. No matter how many times you say it wasn't you, but many times what do parents argue about? Money, child rearing. And they're like, it was me. And now I have to find a way to get them back together. And if I didn't, then I failed.
Do you express that to parents? Because I say this a lot, but I feel children are often forgotten, that they have feelings too. They're navigating this process just as their parents. So if a kid tells you, hey, this is my fault, I need to fix it, do you notify the parents of that? What are your next steps?
Absolutely. I notify the parents. We have a form that they can fill out for counseling, because divorce is trauma. It's one of the traumas, you know, natural disasters, death. If the parents are willing, they usually sign off. Now, at the same time, they're very concerned, like, well, whatever he or she says, is it going to be used against me in court? So it's like, okay, you need to talk to our school psychologist or a counselor about that. For me as a teacher, it's just about the referral and the recommendation.
You're also a mandated reporter. Has there ever been a situation where the divorce was so bad that you had to report a family?
I have had to report, unfortunately, every single year to Department of Child and Family Services. But when divorce happened, if it was that severe, they already came to me with restraining orders. So it didn't happen during my school year. But I've had many where it's like, here are all the people who can't pick her up from school. One of them is dad. Please be aware.
That's very unfortunate for children. You're very engaged with your students. And as an educator, what about new teachers that aren't as versed as you? What advice would you give them to not only watch out for children of divorce, but children that are having a hard time and you can see it?
We have to be informed. Even though I'm a teacher in my own classroom, you know, I'm still in elementary school, so I'm not having 120 students go through my day. We have a ton of support. We have our school psychologists. We have our counselor. As newer teachers, they have mentor teachers. They're required to have mentor teachers. We're supposed to be able to go to our administration, to our coordinators, to our vice principals, our principals. So there's a lot of support out there. And I would urge them to seek help. You're not in this alone. And it does take a community. Like, we are all in it together for our kiddos.
You know, I'd like to give children voices, because their voice, again, it gets drowned out at times. If you were speaking from the children you observed in your classroom, what do you think they would want to say to their parents?
So many of things are going through my head. One is, I'll never forget, for one of my second graders who drew pictures of his parents screaming at each other. Anytime someone raised their voice in class, he would put his hands over his ears and he would say, stop screaming, stop screaming. You know what? That's too hard. I'm not sure what they would say to their parents. It's so different whether, you know what I mean? It depends on that situation, because I do know that there are situations where they're like, I'm glad they're divorced. It's better.
Right.
That's the amicable one, right? Where like mom has moved on, she has a family, dad has moved on, but my student still feels a part of like, oh, I've got stepbrothers and stepsisters. So everything is great. But oftentimes, I would just say kids just want to feel loved and accepted and seen. And I think many times they're lost between the anger and hurt happening behind them. And they internalize it because they're a part of mom and they're a part of dad. And there's a lot of hateful words happening up here. I don't know if parents always realize the impact they have on their kids and the words that they say about the other parent, because it's really deep. We see it in their writing. They bring it up in community circle and they just want to feel loved and accepted.
This is so challenging for babies. But how can teachers help promote resilience and emotional well-being in children of divorced parents?
Something that that's taught all throughout LA Unified is socio-emotional learning. And that's knowing how to regulate your emotions, how to cope, how to be a friend, how to deal with bullying. And that resilience is taught. Now, is a one-week course on resilience going to help even my sixth graders? No. But one thing we do teach them is, don't be afraid to ask for help. Asking for help isn't a weakness. And so knowing that we do have these resources for our students, we do encourage them to use it. I do not claim to be an expert at all. And so that is why I'm just like, if you ever need someone to talk to, you can come to me anytime, but you can also talk, to our school psychologist. And they're really good. We also have psychiatric social workers. So there's a lot of support in Los Angeles Unified for students who are going through divorce.
That's very different from when I grew up. We did not have that social emotional component in schools when we went through our education. I think that's very, very useful. In terms of the psychologist, it's one for the entire school?
It is one for the entire school, and we only get her twice a week. So she's shared between other schools, unless your school can afford to purchase more days with your school psychologist. And then it even gets murkier because you might not get the same one from last year. So, you know, the kids have to start all over again.
So how does that happen if a kid is really struggling one day and the psychologist is not there? What's the next step?
Me, the teacher, our coordinators. I've worked at three schools. They've all been phenomenal listeners. You know, our principal, our school nurse, someone will always be there for our kids. Even if they don't want to come and talk to me, there's always someone else they can come and talk to. And so I think that we've set these things up because of what's been going on, unfortunately, in the news for the past 20 years with gun violence and school shootings. They want to really put things in place to support kids and their mental health.
What about the education piece, right? Because we know, especially sixth grade and seventh, eighth, those grades become important. So what happens if a kid just tanks a semester?
So, okay, now maybe this is a me issue. I don't allow that to happen.
Okay.
There's no tanking a semester because we're going to work. Sometimes it's hard. You don't, like, some of us are really blessed. You've got family support. You've got mom and dad and grandma and tia. And sometimes you don't because you have a single mom who's working two jobs. And so it's like, this is about you. This is your future. No one's doing it but you. And so I think when you put that ownership on the kids, and again, you show them how much you care, they will be willing to put in the work. I have yet to have someone who is like, screw this, I'm not doing this anymore. Not as hard as the teachers at our schools work. Mm-hmm. Like, we are fighting for these kids.
You talk a lot about supporting the parents, supporting the children. Who supports the teachers?
One another? You have to have your teacher community. Now, there are things going on like, okay, we're going to do SEL, social emotional learning for the teachers, and the administration's going to get on board. As you hear in the media, there's a huge teacher shortage. There's a huge teacher burnout because we are getting secondary trauma. Like, I'm talking about the one student who's having, you know, their parents are going through a divorce and he's really struggling. But what about this kid? And this other kid, I mean, there's so much. And so, unfortunately, a lot of us lean on our friends for emotional support because we're all in the trenches together.
So you all can't go see the psychologist. That's just for the students?
It is. She will send us things like, make sure you take care of yourself and like emails. But she herself is so overwhelmed. There's no way that she could also take on all of the teacher's needs.
She would never have time. So we love to educate in this show. So what advice, we'll start with the parents first. What advice would you give to parents to make sure there's a smooth transition for children as they navigate this process?
Okay, for parents, you need to work together for the purpose of helping your child. You have to put your issues aside and know that your child's education is the priority. Your child's well-being is the priority. And so no matter what's going on, the kids still have to see a united front when it comes to education.
Yeah, because I've seen in my work, a lot of times parents start fighting and then forget about what's best. And then they're taking them out of school and they're keeping them out for a week at a time or not mm-hmm. dropping their kids off at school because they don't want the other parent to pick them up. And have you seen that? And kind of how do the kids adjust to that? Because some kids really love going to school. So I can't imagine if they're not being dropped off or staying at home because of the feud the parents have.
It's so hard for them. Sometimes they have this, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday with mom, Tuesday, Thursday with dad. But then the following week, dad's got Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And so they don't have their uniform. They left their books at the other person's house. They're late to school. And I don't think parents understand this, like, oh, you're just 5 minutes late to school. It makes a difference. It makes a difference when the kids come to school early, they feel prepared, they're in line with their friends, they walk in. When you come to school even 5 minutes late, you're frazzled, you don't know what's going on, everybody has already put away their stuff, what's everyone doing, what did Miss Mao say? It's chaotic for them. And so like, I would just really urge those parents, like you need to speak to the teacher and you need to figure out what you're gonna do to help your child that school year. And like come to some kind of agreement.
Well, I hope they listen to you because clients don't listen to me. I'm like, can we stop this? Sometimes it's just ridiculous. Oh, we're going to Universal Studios on a Wednesday? You don't need to go to Universal Studios on a Wednesday.
Yes. And that's what I was saying when it was fun dad, mm-hmm. right? Like we got these tickets, it's cheaper, the lines are shorter. So let's just take them out. So the value of education almost lessens, right? Just because they want to spend quality time with their kid. And parents have said, because I feel guilty.
But then that becomes about the parent, right? And that's no longer about the kid. Like you don't want to feel guilty. You want to pull your kid out, but that's not child focused.
No, it's not. And so even like when situations like that occur and one of the parents is like, you can't take her out of school. She needs to be there. She's not doing well. Many times the other parent doesn't believe that parent. Mm-hmm. And so like there's this mistrust happening and then teachers are stuck in the middle as well, where it's like, I'm not having a parent conference with him. I need a different time. And I refuse to meet with her and they're bad mouthing in the front of the school for the whole community to see. And it's embarrassing for the kids. They just want to have normal, like, you know what I mean? They right. don't want any negative attention focused on them.
I've seen this a lot in practice where I don't want the girlfriend of dad or boyfriend of mom to pick up. Is there a policy in school that says, because the way the court sees it, if mom feels boyfriend is safe, boyfriend can pick up. So how does the school deal with that?
It's the same. There is a form at the beginning of the year mm-hmm. that parents have to fill out that says, these are the people allowed to take my child home from school. But if they're not on that list, we call whoever parent is in charge.
Do you all ask for court orders to see to make sure everyone's in compliance? How does that work? Because sometimes one parent will have sole legal custody, right? So they're making all the decisions. Mm-hmm. So Yes. Do you have that so it's filed and they're not calling me trying to go to court because mom is calling the school, although dad has sole legal custody.
It is the parent responsibility to turn in all those paperwork to the office. And so our office staff knows, our principal knows, the vice principal knows, and then the teachers are then told, like, these are the parents that we need to be aware of to make sure that you're not sending them home with the wrong parent or with an uncle or an auntie, whatever it is. But it is the parent's responsibility, though, to turn in that paperwork.
I can't remember the name of the student, but I remember dad picked up and end up killing the child, but he was not supposed to pick the child up. So I'm always curious to know, because some schools are better than others, and I think schools just don't want to get involved. It's already emotional enough, and I get it, but I think it's very important that schools, like you're right, parents have an obligation to inform the school what's happening. And again, that's another very unfortunate situation that dad might not be able to pick up or mom might not be able to pick up. And kids notice those things. So that's not the greatest, but it is what it is. What about educators? What advice would you give educators to help with the transition that kids experience in this process?
My advice would be to be patient, to be understanding, to be patient of them. You know, kids, they're kids, right? You don't know if they're misbehaving because they're silly, they're attention seeking, they're needy, or you don't know what's going on at home. And so again, back to my advice of you need to build that relationship. You have to know your students. And I know it's hard in the middle school and high schools because you have so many of them. But in elementary, we have smaller class size numbers, right? And we have to figure out like, what's behind the behaviors? Like nobody, like again, no one comes to school and says, I'm going to be a jerk. We have to talk to our kids. We need to figure out what's going on so we can support them and be that support, be one of those supports for them and not be afraid to go out and ask for help. Like we're not alone in this.
I don't think they pay you guys enough to have to to manage everything that you have to manage as a teacher. That is a lot. You're looking to see if there are problems in your children, building relationships, fostering social, mental wellness. That is a lot.
You have to love it. And I mean, I'm not saying we should not be compensated, because we definitely should be. But, you know, this career, you have to love building those relationships. Like, I love seeing my kids grow, seeing where we started off with and how we end the school year together. I meet with them every summer. I just met with them on Friday. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're hoping that those relationships last a lifetime.
Well, better you than me. I think that's why you do you do what you do and I do what I do. But there has to be some positivity in this, right? Have you ever witnessed the resilience and growth of a child from a divorced family?
Absolutely. So I do have a student whose father was abusive and parents got divorced. And just because it's her and mom, this girl works hard. She is hustling. She knows it's her and mom. She has dreams of being a social worker. She's going to go to USC. Like, she's driven because it's just the two of them. So I have seen from divorce, positive things have come from it, right? And also just seeing your parents happier.
Right.
Because it is really hard for them to see their parents upset, because there's a lot of trust in parents that my mom and dad know everything. And so when you start seeing them rattled, and that might freak out some parents, but they're kind of like, what, you don't know everything? And then they start doubting you, and they start doubting who they are and how do they belong in the situation, right? So a lot of my students, even though we were talking about the positivity, they could become very needy. They want to be reassured all the time. They want to make sure that they're doing it right because they don't want to cause anything else. But I have seen positive things that have come out of divorce. And that just means happier parents and happier kid.
So it's not all bad, but I like parents to hear from other people, not just me telling them a lot of what you said, but you experience it. You watch it. You have to help them through that. And I think parents need to learn, because if they did not fight, I probably wouldn't be employed, but learn how to work together for the benefit of their children, which is not easy to do. I get it. You're breaking up. There might be new significant others. It is not easy, but we cannot forget about our children.
Yes. No, I completely agree. Especially when they've both moved on. It's really hard for them to figure out, like, where do I belong in this situation?
Right.
Like, they feel like, when my student this past year said, I'm the unwanted one.
Oh, wow.
And so that was really hard.
How did you respond to that?
I said, we will always want you and you are always wanted. Like, how blessed you are that you have two families. And she's like, but I stay with my mom over here on some days and my dad over here and they all have other kids. And then I was like, well, do you feel like you're not a part of it? And she's like, no, I do. And so I did mention it to parents, to both of them. Like, hey, can you just keep an eye on her? Can you show her an extra love? Maybe you guys can do something special, just the two of you, just to reconnect. And both parents were really open to it.
That's probably a whole nother podcast, as blending families and blending children and mm-hmm. managing expectations, jealousy, all of that. That has to be a whole nother layer of management for you.
It is. Because especially in sixth grade, which I've been doing now for 5 years, you know, they're really figuring out their identity and who they are at this time. And so the family dynamics play a huge role. And in sixth grade, they're embarrassed about everything. So they're embarrassed their parents are together. They're embarrassed that their parents are separated. They're just embarrassed.
Right, so, right.
Everything impacts them.
This was so enlightening for me. Lori Beth, thank you for sharing your practical advice, personal experiences, and shedding light on the importance of collaboration between educators and families to create a nurturing environment for children of divorce. Thank you all for listening to Legally Uncensored, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on all social media platforms at Legally Uncensored. Goodbye.